Welcome everyone to episode 376 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek. It is very early on Thursday morning and we are going to react to a wild 2020 NBA draft. Before we do that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we are also live right now on the Locker Room app. So if you are on iOS, please download the Locker Room app. You can come hang out while we record live, ask questions, say we're doing a terrible job, whatever you want. Please check that out, the Locker Room app on the iOS store. With all of that said, I am joined today by someone who I can only assume is equally sleep-deprived, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It's going well. I'm not that sleepy, honestly. Just sick, because my timing is awful. That's how it's supposed to be, I guess. Just staying up in the middle of the night for the draft, and then suddenly you just felt that itch in your throat, and you go, oh, I know that one. And then you wake up, and you go, okay, this is going to be a tough several days. That's just how it's going to be. But no, draft to me is like Christmas, because I really don't, like, I don't get all the fuss about actual Christmas or like the holidays.
Oh,
so
right.
The draft for me is always like my time. And the fact that it's so close to Christmas now is kind of great.
There you go. All right. Well, let's dive right in, Moit. Honestly, to me, there are a lot more winners from the draft than losers. So I think we're going to spend far more time on the winner's side. So let's start with, if you had to pick one team that was the biggest winner of the NBA draft, who was it and why is it the Philadelphia 76ers?
Yeah, oh my God, you were so linked. That was the most loaded question I've ever heard in my life. Yes, obviously it's the Philadelphia 76ers. I was waiting on you to just basically gloat, and this is going to be a theme throughout this podcast. No, I get that there are a lot of people who've listened to us over the years who DM me and go like, oh my God, Brian is such a Sixers homer. Look, you are entitled to be a Sixers homer today, because this was objectively great. You got out of Al Horford's contract. You acquired Seth Curry, who's been a staple on this podcast for years as one we are absolutely in love with. You get Isaiah Joe at 49, Paul Reed at 58, Tyrese Maxey at 21. This was just an extraordinary draft for the Philadelphia 76ers. All hail Daryl Morey. This was... I was sitting there following it live. I did this live blog for Forbes, and so I didn't really have time to like go into like Twitter reactions and all that stuff. But I desperately, on several occasions, wanted to basically take a 5-minute break to just go on Twitter and go, "This is fantastic. Are you guys realizing what's happening right now?" It's absolutely one of the best drafts in Philadelphia 76ers history.
I can confirm that most of Sixers Twitter was aware that good things were happening for the first time in years. That is a positive. But yeah, I mean, look, if you told me Wednesday morning that all it would cost to get out of Al Horford's contract is one first round pick and not the number 21 pick, but it was a 2025 pick that is lightly protected. It's like top six in 2025. And then I think top four in the next 2 years, and then converts into a second if it doesn't convey by then. So very it's hopefully gonna convey as a first round pick down the line, but to keep 21, keep Shake Milton, keep Matisse Thybulle, and then flip him for Danny Green, who we need to talk about Danny Green for a second, because I tweeted out the Sixers what I think is going to be their new starting lineup, and I got a lot of feedback that was like, if you're starting Danny Green, you're gonna get knocked out in the first round. And I'm like, do you guys not realize that Danny Green has started every single game for the champion for the last 2 years? Like,
I think that's a little bit flawed logic, but let me hear your thesis.
Well, I mean, so I'm saying this with Horford and Josh Richardson. In a vacuum, they downgraded in terms of talent in both trades. Like, Al Horford is a more talented basketball player than Danny Green. Josh Richardson is a more talented basketball player than Seth Curry. It just, you know, overall.
Overall, yes, but doesn't have that one elite skill that Seth has. Yeah.
Right. So what I think Daryl Morey was prioritizing, he said this in his post-draft presser, was he was all about the fit. He's like, I need to build a roster to maximize Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. And he's like, look, I didn't, you know, when I joined the team a couple weeks ago, I didn't come in assuming I had all the answers here. But, you know, he kept mentioning, like, when you surround these guys with shooting, you know, do the lineup analysis. They're historically good together. If they have, you know, go back a couple years when they had Redick and Covington and Šarić, and they were just dominant. So he's like, yep. Eventually it became very clear we just need to have more shooters. And in Seth Curry, you have a guy who's a career 44.3% shooter. It's the second best rate in NBA history of guys who have taken 1,000 threes. And then Danny Green, I know he's streaky. I know especially, you know, it's fresh. His playoff performance is fresh in everyone's mind. Like, he's not going to be... I mean, Seth Curry is the number one three-point shooter on the team right now. But, you know, Danny Green's going to be a much better three-point shooter than either Horford or Richardson. So while they downgraded in terms of overall talent, it just fits a lot better. And I think that's going to be the key to this team actually working and making sense and being able to score more than, you know, 99.2 points per 100 possessions, which was their actual mark with Ben, Joe, and Al Horford on the floor last season.
I'm going to push back a little bit on the Danny Green is going to be a better shooter than Josh Richardson thing.
Okay. Because
Richardson was never given a team that really optimized his ability to shoot. It wasn't... Like, yes, he did have a down year shooting also on his own, but he is a significantly better shooter than what he showcased in Philly. And in large part of that was, you know, they just didn't have the setup for it. They weren't a heavy ball-swinging team like, go find the corners, go find the guy above the break. Like, no, they were continuously pounding into the paint and making short drives. And so I don't think his game was optimized in Philadelphia. But I hear you. Like, with this new team in place, with Seth Curry there, with the new shooters there, yes, I think you're right in the sense that that would, for example, give a guy like Danny Green more space, more room to knock down open jump shots. I would still very much prefer Josh Richardson, also just as a shooter, but I get it. He's coming up for a contract next year. Mm-hmm. If that cap crunch is not going to get easier moving forward. Well, it will without Horford, obviously, but, you know, Richardson's probably going to ask for, what, $17-18 million a year, and you have to, like, figure out, is that something he's worth?
Right.
And so him getting moved is logical.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I always assumed, unless they moved both Tobias and Al, that they weren't going to re-sign Josh, so... Flipping him for Seth Curry, I mean, you know, on the surface, they overpaid for Seth Curry. They gave up Josh Richardson, who, again, is arguably the more talented player than Seth Curry. They also gave up the number 36 pick, which, you know, is not a huge asset. The hit rate at that point of the draft is pretty low, but still, like, it seems like they should be the one getting a pick rather than giving it up. But as you said, Richardson's up for a contract next year. Seth Curry signed for 3 more years that it averages around $8 million a year. Like, that's a really good contract. So I think that's what factored in there.
Yeah, that's what you're paying for that, and you're paying for one absolutely elite skill. So, again, I'm going to push back a little bit on that because I actually think that you know how high I am on Seth. And there's a reason that poll with him and Steven Adams ended the way that it did, with a 50-50 split back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's because that one swing skill, that one elite skill is so valuable. I would actually beg to differ on the whole, you know, value perspective. I totally agree with you that Josh Richardson in a vacuum is the better overall player. He's got, you know, great defensive ability. He's got some ball handling. But when you are a knockdown shooter of that caliber in Seth Curry in today's NBA... I would just have to argue that his influence on the court is just going to be greater. This is the NBA in 2020. There's no doubt that if you are one of the top shooters, your influence is immensely huge. Immensely. So I think this was fair.
Yeah. And then, you know, that we've barely even touched on their actual draft picks, but, you know, Tyrese Maxey slipping to 21. I don't think many people reasonably expected him to be there. And, you know, Morey after the draft was saying, like, look, we saw his shooting percentages. You know, he shot under 30% from three
right.
at Kentucky, but we've analyzed his mechanics. Like, we think it's going to be better. We're not putting too much stock into a very small sample size given his pedigree. And then Isaiah Joe at 49, no huge surprise. Jonathan Wasserman of Bleacher Report had tweeted out on Tuesday that there appeared to, you know, there's buzz about them having given him a promise at some point. And his coach on Wednesday tweeted a picture. It was like, Doc Rivers is so motivational. Ben Simmons is a great prospect. It was like, okay, we get it. Isaiah Joe's going to the Sixers. But then Paul Reed at 58 too. Like, not a move that's going to draw a lot of headlines, but you know, John Hollinger of The Athletic had him among his top 20 prospects and was like, what am I missing here? Because this guy's really good and he's just not getting, like, you know, he was saying before the draft, it seems like this guy's going to be a late second round pick. And if he is, like, this is the steal of the draft right here.
Certainly could be. I mean, he's a very long athlete, strong rebounder, great defensive upside. Yeah, at 58, you couldn't ask for more. It's a huge haul. And that's where I feel drafts can really be swung, right? It's when you hit on the margins. You and I talk about the margins a lot, and this was it. This was a perfect example of hitting on the margins. You are in a position where you have assets that some teams look at and go, well, that's not really essential. You, for example, the guard packs let Chicago Bulls back in the day, like second round picks don't matter. Oh, we have the 38th pick in a deep draft. Oh, let's sell it to Golden State. Like, no, that's where good teams understand that if we have draft picks, even late ones, we will find the best possible players there and give ourselves a chance to hit on those guys. Because if those guys turn into rotation players or maybe even starters, boom, we have extra assets, we have extra capital we can move, we have pieces that allows us to get significantly better through trades or whatever. It's just smart. So, you know, lesson of the day, kids, don't sell your draft picks unless, of course, Tillman Fertitta offers you almost $5 million for a second rounder.
In
2021, in which case you can, I'll allow you to consider it. Yes.
Yeah, that's the only reason I actually like the Sixers draft is they did not sell a pick. They entered the draft with five picks and they did not sell a single one, which I did not see coming.
Yeah.
But since you mentioned teams that hit on the margins, let's go next. I mean, I think Dallas is another big winner. You know, the team that is getting Josh Richardson, and they got the 36th pick. They spent it on Tyler Bay. But, you know, I think one of the other big steals of the draft is Tyrell Terry slipping to 31.
Tyrell Terry to 31. Josh Green at 18.
Yeah.
I loved what Dallas did. You know how the Milwaukee Bucks have just been completely, and we'll get to the Bogdan Bogdanovic scandal, not today maybe, but because we don't have that much time on our hands.
Yeah.
But you know how the Bucks have just been so desperate to build around Giannis? They've just basically said, we want you to stay, so we are getting you every ounce of talent that we can. Dallas is like, we don't want to be in that situation down the line with Doncic.
Right.
Yeah. We're going to give you that talent now. Like, we just got you the most athletic wing in the entire draft in Tyler Bay. Then we got you arguably, like, a top five most athletic player in the draft in Josh Green, who also has some shooting potential. We just got you Josh Richardson, an established two-way wing who fits your from an age perspective. We got you Tyrell Terry, a point guard who can lead the offense, who could shoot the hell out of the ball, and is actually a very interesting pull-up shooter with significant off-the-dribble potential in the NBA. Like, Dallas right now, you know what? I'm just going to say it. People are like, oh, it's a sixth seed or whatever. If you look at Luka, if you take into account Luka's pending improvements once again, and then if we just cross our fingers and hope that Porzingis is fully healthy for a full season, that would be nice. Mm-hmm. And if you add in these inclusions right here, Dallas could be a top three team in the West, if not the league.
Yeah, I mean, look, we'll see what happens in free agency starting tomorrow, which is absurd to say.
Yeah, it is.
But, I mean, it's very clear that Houston, who we'll get to in the loser section, I think, they are going down quickly. So that's going to open up one spot. I mean, you know, it's going to be hard to topple one of the two LA teams and Denver. But that isn't to say they can't do it.
Is it, though? Is it tough to overcome the Clippers at this point? Is it, though?
Well, I mean, the Clippers made a big upgrade as well, I would argue.
They did, but I'm just saying, like, if there are still internal chemistry issues, that can, you know, then the talent really doesn't matter. We saw as much in the playoffs. Fair.
And we don't know if Montrezl Harrell is coming back. I would lean not at this point.
Right. And Lou Williams is 75 years old.
That's fair. That's fair. Let's go to the top of the draft now, Moore. Which teams do you think really knocked it out of the park in those first few picks?
So the Charlotte Hornets stand out, obviously. Here's the thing. There are rumors buzzing around. See what I did there? that they wanted to trade up to number one to take James Wiseman. They wanted a center.
Yeah.
And everyone and their grandmother, okay, well, me at least, was like, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't trade up. Just take whoever lands. And if you are really obsessed with getting a center, at the very worst, you can take on Onyeka Okongwu at three. That actually, in my opinion, wouldn't even be a reach. It would be fine. He's really, really solid. And then LaMelo fell there. And I think they just determined if he's there, that's the best value we can get. So they grabbed him. And then they just decided, let's solve our center issues in the second round, where Vernon Carey out of Duke. And let me just give you a little piece of information on this guy. So right now he is more of a traditional like low post center in the mold of like an Enes Kanter, but he played the most of his season at Duke in the area of playing with a playing weight of about 260 to 270 pounds. That's pretty big for a guy who's 6'10", 6'10", 6'11". Now, apparently, he slimmed down to about 240 over the whole pandemic period, which is still active. I don't know why I presented that in past tense, but you know what I mean. And he was already nimble at 270, like very nimble. He was a guy who could just move his way around and was surprisingly quick and agile at 270 pounds. Now, if you take 30 pounds away from that, you are getting a significantly different athlete. So I am so curious to see if he is just going to be one of those really impressive young players, maybe not right off the bat. Bigs usually take a couple years, but down the line, if he could be a guy that could be a dependable starting center, like he is so quick off his feet when it comes to like making spin moves and like getting off the ground. Like there is a lot to like with Vernon Carey, absolutely. So that I liked, and then they got Grant Riller at 36,
like 56 actually. I had it written wrong.
Sorry,
which is even. Yeah, which is even more ridiculous. I don't know how that kid fell to 56.
Yeah, so Charleston point guard. Quick little thing, can really just get into the teeth of the defense. Still needs to up his shooting volume, I feel, from outside at least. But just a ridiculously effective player, high scorer. I think they have a loaded backcourt now. You know, they have Riller, they have LaMelo, they have Terry Rozier, they have Devontae Graham. And maybe they're not going to keep all four. Like, maybe this allows them to move some pieces around, but that's fine because they need talent. And right now, they just got that necessary talent injection, and now they have options. When is the last time that you and I could say that about the Charlotte Hornets, that they have options? They are in a very, very good position. Look, credit to Mitch Kupchak. I mean, we have been criticizing him on this podcast before for making poor choices. I mean, Timofey Mozgov and Luol Deng spring to mind. This was a redemption draft for him, and I think he did extremely well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to it's like as simple as a lot of people had LaMelo Ball as the number one prospect in this draft.
Correct.
The Hornets resisting the temptation to trade up and getting ostensibly the best prospect of the draft at number three is already great. But, you know, they had Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier on the roster already. So they could have overthought this and be like, no, we don't need a point guard. We're going to reach for someone else at a different position.
Yeah.
they were smart and realized, like, okay, we have these guys, but are they our franchise centerpiece? Do they have the, you know, multi-time all-star potential that we need to say, we are building our roster around this guy? I like both of those players, but no, of course not.
Right.
LaMelo Ball could be that guy. He has that sort of star power. So, yeah. For I mean, when's the last, like, Kemba is the last prospect of this caliber that they've gotten, right? Like, it's been 10-plus years at this point.
Yeah. Just in terms of star potential, you mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I would argue so. And even then, like, Kemba started out just so horrifically, which LaMelo also might.
Right.
That remains to be seen. I agree. This is the optimal chance for LaMelo to have his own team down the line. This is the star potential that is there. They finally have, you know, a higher floor, I think. Mm-hmm. If not in terms of playing style, at least in terms of assets. Like, yeah. Even if LaMelo has a bad first couple months of the season, he still has trade value. It's LaMelo Ball. Sure. A lot of teams, like you said, had him at top of the draft board. So if there's a team out there that's suddenly like, hey, Hornets, just curious, what would it take? And they go, well, we need a couple wings, two draft picks, blah, 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 like a really attractive package. And maybe Tilmer Fertitta says yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because why not? Like, that's a fire sale right there waiting to happen.
Yeah,
But my point is, they are finally, for the first time in what feels like forever, in the driver's seat. That mm-hmm. has to feel good if you're a Hornets fan. That has to feel fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go one pick down, Mort, to yep. your former slash maybe current again team, the Chicago Bulls, who I think they would, you know, they kind of held the keys to the draft, right? Edwards, yep. Wiseman, Ball, we're going to go 1, 2, 3 in some order in all likelihood. Number four right. is really where things could start to swing, and they went with Patrick Williams, who, yep. you know, I think it's a surprise to see him go that high, but there was a lot of buzz leading up to the draft that this kid, you know, probably back in March when everything shut down, I think he was more considered a, you know, a late lottery prospect. And then as the months went on, it was just like everyone is falling in love with this kid. Like, you mm-hmm. know, the Pistons at 7 seemed to be his floor. And then I think Casey Johnson, was all over this Wednesday morning saying, like, look, this is a serious consideration at number 4. So what do you think of the pick, and how is he going to fit with the existing Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr. core?
So I actually see him as, you know, that new age power forward that I go on and on about on this podcast. You know, mm-hmm. I don't like stiff power forwards whatsoever. I think the days of where a Lauri Markkanen or a John Collins could be wildly influential players. I will say the door is more open for Collins because he improved greatly as a shot blocker. And if you have defense, it doesn't. Then you can play the four, and then you can be a traditional four as long as you have defense and a type of playmaking. Markkanen has none of that, and Patrick Williams has loads of versatility. He's 6'8", and while it says 225 pounds, I don't know if I buy that. He is very, very muscular. I would feel confident probably putting add 15 pounds to that. He is big and strong. I don't think he's a 3 full-time. I think he can slide down to that spot a little bit. But I think he's the new age 4 where he is quote-unquote undersized in that sense because he's 6'8". But he's defensively inclined. He has a pull-up game. He's a great offensive rebounder. So I think he is the long-term Markkanen replacement. And I was actually, when they took him, I was expecting a follow-up move of them trading Markkanen, and they didn't. But that could come. Maybe that comes to free agency. Maybe they want to see what they have in Markkanen this last year. I don't really see why, because you'll have to enter into restricted free agency with him next year. So, yeah. But let's assume that moving forward, it's Patrick Williams and Wendell Carter Jr. in the front court. Mm-hmm. That is going to be absolutely beastly from a defensive perspective. Offensively, I think could be great because I have a lot of faith in Wendell Carter's offensive ability. And Patrick Williams offensively, that's the big question. Like, what can he do? He wasn't a consistent long-range shooter. He was not a high-volume three-point shooter. So it becomes a question of him finding a defined offensive role in the NBA. But ultimately, if that's the front court moving forward, defensively, it's at the very least, it's going to be epic.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch the presser with Arturis Konashovas because I was...
I didn't either, because yeah. I was working.
Yeah, exactly. I was waiting for the Morey one, but I was following it along on Twitter, and it seems like they were really hyping up Williams' versatility in particular.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'm with you. You know, long term, it's probably does not bode well for Lauri Markkanen.
Right. Bulls fan hated the pick, by the way.
Who did they want?
I came to learn. I don't know what they wanted. That's the typical thing of Bulls fans.
Sure.
They are slowly transitioning into that whole crowd that boos every pick, like the Knicks. Mm-hmm. It feels like. No, but I don't know what they expected here. Like, some people wanted Denny, which if the Bulls had taken Denny, I would have been just as, you know, it was same reaction to me, because I do think highly of Denny, just as I do Patrick Williams. That would have been fine. It's like they couldn't have gone wrong either way. Some wanted more offense. Some wanted a guard. Now, if they had taken Kyron Lewis at four, while that would have been high, I would also have been good with that, because he's the guy that I'm running with this draft. I think he's just a tremendous individual talent. But overall, I think this was decent value. And they signed Devon Dotson, who I actually interviewed at Forbes earlier this year, as an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
Which, hey, man, that's not bad. Like, this is a downhill point guard. It's like 6'1", 6'2", so he isn't, like, terribly tall, but he's super athletic. When I spoke to him, he was really talking about, like, how to run in the open court, how to get into the offense quicker. Like, he's smart. There's a lot to like there.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of my second-round targets for the Sixers. I like him a lot, so to get him as a UDFA is great value on the Bulls' perspective.
I think it is, and this is where you're going to see this front office differ from guard packs. Like, this is a front office that's going to take that chance with undrafted guys and go, hey, you know what? Here we go. We want to gamble on this, whereas guard packs probably, you know, shut the light off after the first round, went home. This anecdote, I think, sums up guard packs perfectly. In 2008, when the Bulls won the Derrick Rose lottery, John Paxson, the general manager of the time, didn't even follow the draft live. It was his son who was like, Dad, we moved up.
I think that's the tell of whether you have a bad or a good front office. Like, if you're holding media availability after the first round, that's not a good sign.
It is not. So for the Bulls fans, I'm... some of them are already out on Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley, but because of last night, and I would just urge those people listening to grow up, because I think they did fine. Mirko Simonovic in the second round at 44, he's a stash guy, but he comes from the same program that many other bigs before him at Betamax. It's in Serbia. Which is like an NBA farm of international players, especially bigs. So you know what? Timothy Luavo Cabarro was also a product there.
Oh.
So I am by no means down on what the Bulls did. And in the second round, there are a lot of people upset at that because they didn't know the guy. I think that's, if you don't know a guy, that's fine. Don't be upset at it, because that guy could be good. And I kind of trust Arturis Karnišovas when it comes to international prospects.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could be upset and thinking like, there are known quantities like a Grant Riller or a Paul Reed on the board. But, I mean, the Bulls are in a roster crunch, right? Like, they don't have a ton of available roster spots right now, so...
No, but they could have figured that out if they wanted to. That's not the problem. Yeah. I do genuinely think that they took the guy that they thought had the best upside. It's Arturis Karnišovas. He has an idea about what's going on across the pond. And I think this is always what happens, right? It's the college guys who play, 30 plus minutes, where the stats are there, television is on. So American fans are like, hey, we know this. Like you said, no commodity. We know what this guy can do. I can see his stat line. I can see him on the TV. Mm-hmm. I can't see that other guy on TV. I don't even know what his stats are. So because right. I am uninformed, that means he's a bad pick. And it doesn't work quite that way.
He has a funny sounding name. It'll look weird on the back of a jersey.
Right. Oh, did you see? Apparently, so I wasn't aware of this. But apparently NBA TV before the draft had some experts gathering. I don't even know who were there. It's a quick throwaway post I saw on a Danish forum. But basically, they were talking about Denny Avdija and mm-hmm. and going, well, we don't know if he's got the mental toughness because he's not American. And like, have you learned nothing from Luka Doncic? Are we there? Are we still there where Euros are getting trashed for their mental makeup? Are you kidding me? This is 2020. Have we not gotten a little bit further? Did we not just go through an entire summer of basically realizing, but trying to create a movement where people who are different from one another might not be inferior? Did we not just go through that? Like, can we please just move on with the discourse? I am so fed up with that.
Well, Luka hasn't won at least 3 MVPs yet, so he is clearly soft and crap.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. They made a complete... They should have taken Bagley, you're right.
Oh, yeah, correct. God. Correct. All right, well, since you brought up Denny, let's get into who were some of your other favorite picks in the lottery in particular?
Oh, Detroit. Detroit, you know, getting Killian Hayes at 7 getting Isaiah Stewart at 16 was a little out there. I think you could have gotten him later, but they also got Sadiq Bey. I like the overall trio. Stewart to me is the weak link in that regard, but they also got Tony Bradley from Utah, and I want to talk about this. So Tony Bradley, right? He got better, and you know he's not someone who is he's not Rudy. Obviously, he's not Rudy Gobert, but you could sense for him he's a smarter player now. Like last year or this year, I don't even know how we frame it anymore. The guy played 58 games. Before that, he played 12. So finally, Quinn Snyder trusted him. He came in, gave you essentially 5 boards, 5 rebounds per game, a lot of activity. I like his shot blocking. I like his defensive upside. I like the way he shoots the ball. Like, there's potential there. And I actually thought, long-term, he could have been a pretty good Rudy replacement. Not that he would be, you know, as good as Rudy, obviously. But if Rudy was, you know, requesting a max, at which, you know, he's... in today's NBA, where a defensive-minded center probably wouldn't get the max anyway. But he was like, here, this is what I want. And the Jazz was like, no. We're going to offer you a certain amount. If you say no, you can go sign elsewhere, and he would. Then Tony Bradley would have been just an excellent, excellent guy to bring up and kind of promote to that position. So I was really surprised when I saw the Jazz moved on from him, which makes me wonder if there's something behind the scenes there. But for now, though, because I haven't heard anything else, I love this with Detroit. You know, they had 3 top 20 picks, traded their way to it. But they realized we're going into a full-on rebuild. We need to fill out that cupboard. And they did. They have so many assets today, so many more assets today than they did the day before. I love what they did. Love what they did.
Yeah, I mean, Killian Hayes was the number one prospect for Kevin O'Connor of the Ringer. I believe Jonathan Wasserman of Bleacher Report had him number 2 overall.
Yeah, let's not give Kevin O'Connor too much... too much credit here, because he was the one who reported that the Bulls were interested in moving Carter Jr. and Forford too. And let's just say, when that report came out, I decided to reach out to people who I know. Mm-hmm. And I very quickly, from multiple sources, got told, yeah, that's not happening whatsoever. That is complete BS. So
That felt like a leak from the Warriors side to drive up the trade price for number 2 for any other interested team.
It was, yes.
But I mean, again, getting a prospect of Hayes' caliber at seven, who also fills a need. I mean, Derrick Rose is not going to be a long-term, you know, centerpiece for this Pistons team. As you said, they're going very, very early stages of a rebuild. So getting this type of young talent, I mean, I know, you know, losing Kennard for Sadiq Bey at 19 might seem like losing value, but again, it's like the Seth Curry, Josh Richardson thing. You got to focus on the contract too. You got to think like an NBA general manager. Luke Kennard's up for an extension this year, and he's going to be a restricted free agent next offseason. Otherwise, you know, if you're the Pistons and you're nowhere near contending right now, do you really want to be the team paying that next contract? Or do you want Sadiq Bey, who is a similarly great shooter, but he's also locked into a cheap four-year rookie contract? Like, now if you're the Pistons, other than Blake Griffin, you've given yourself a ton of flexibility moving forward.
Right. That's why I wanted Chicago to trade Markkanen as well. This is the exact logic. I think Detroit executed this so much better.
Yeah. What did you think of Denny falling all the way to nine to Washington?
So I actually liked the fit in Washington because they were actually slotted to take Onyeka Okongwu, where I was like, you have Mo Wagner and Thomas Bryant already. How is that going to work out? But with Denny being like a ball handling, passing, playmaking four, it actually streamlines the roster pretty great, especially with all the young guys that they built up, like Troy Brown Jr., my pick for MIP for this upcoming season, Isaac Bonka, you know, those guys. So now you throw in Avdija at a four spot that, at least on the bench unit, can initiate the offense, can find cutters, can really get into like this whole passing game. That's an element they didn't really have before. So I love that pick for him, and that his slot is slid to nine. That only presents even more value for him, because I wouldn't have been shocked if he'd gone top five. I wouldn't have hated it either. But for him to go nine, that's just extra value. That's really great value.
Yeah, do you think it was a BPA selection? Like, do you think he can play with Rui, or is it just, you know, this guy should have been picked earlier, we're just taking the best player on the board?
Oh, it was BPA, but I do think he can play with Rui. I mean, so the thing here is, I do think they're going to be staggered a lot. Both are young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Hachimura will be capped at around 30 minutes a game, and you give Avdija the 18 remaining at the 4 spot, but both of them can also kind of slide down to the 3 here on occasion, I could see lineups where they're both on the floor, just as I could see one of those guys taking over some 3, and like maybe Troy Brown Jr. gets into that as well. There's so many different combinations to use now for Washington, which is an asset at the end of the day. Like, that's a benefit, because when you have multiple position players, it just allows you so many different variations of a lineup. So I very much look forward to seeing those guys in action. I wouldn't be surprised if they could work together. Like, Denny will have to improve as a shooter. I think that much is known. But when he returned from the Corona break, he played so much better in the Israeli league. So I'm in on him. I believe in his potential. It might take a little while, but I definitely believe in it. And hey, the Washington Wizards are better off with him than, you know, I think drafting by fit at that point, because Denny's talent is ridiculously high.
Yeah, I mean, there's a nice young foundation being built there for if and when they trade Bradley Beal.
Right.
They'll, you know, presumably target a package of young picks or young players and picks. And, you know, that you can see something being built there that actually might make sense down the line.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Did the Spurs do it again with Devin Vassell at number 11, just getting a guy who shouldn't have fallen that far to them?
So now they have Dejounte Murray, Lonnie Walker, Derek White, Keldon Johnson, and Devin Vassell. They have gone all in on guards and wings, which I think in 2020 is the right play. Vassell might not be the guy with the highest ceiling of those guys, but he will definitely be the one with the highest floor. Because he's, you know, okay, there's no such thing as NBA ready. I use that term often, but it's not quite how it works, because most rookies are actually a net negative. But in terms of what his upside is, a 3-and-D guy with some on-ball creation ability, I think right now he can come in and at least solve some of it. Like, he should be a net positive shooter at the very least. Defensively, like, he might be average from the start, but that's pretty good for a rookie. It's year two, year three, year four, where we're going to see him just completely, embrace that role of being a lockdown guy, a knockdown shooter, maybe with some on-ball creation at that point. I love it for San Antonio. I absolutely loved it. I think they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Tyrese Halliburton, who ended up going to Sacramento at 12, was probably BPA at that point. But for San Antonio, I wonder if they're looking at the roster and they're seeing Murray, Derek White, Lonnie Walker, and like, we have just, we feel good about our guards. You know, this is one where you probably build tiers, or at least I think most teams are in this. That's how they build their boards at this point. It's not like right. A straight rankings. It's okay, we think this guy has, MVP upside. These guys could be all-stars. These guys are solid starters. So I'm guessing from the Spurs perspective, they didn't have a huge gap between Vassell and Halliburton, and they said, okay, we feel good about our guards. Let's go get this wing who actually complements our lineup, rather than taking Halliburton, who's going to create problems down the line if he hits. But, I mean, that led to Sacramento getting Halliburton at 12.
Let me just back up a little bit, because I actually wildly disagree with Halliburton being BPA at that point.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Tyron Lewis was still on the board.
Mm.
And also, Devin Vassell's BPA for me, because I don't know if I said this on this podcast. This is info that is a couple months old, so... But someone that I trust attended a Tyrese Halliburton workout. Mm-hmm. And he wrote me unpromptedly and went, oh boy. So that shot release in the NBA is going to be way too slow. Way too slow. He was really like, I came in with high expectations and I left severely disappointed. Now, that didn't necessarily frame my entire outlook of who he is as a player. Like, this is one person's opinion. So that needn't mean anything necessarily. But it did make me think that if that shot release at the NBA level is too slow, then he'll be somewhat confined to basically being like one of those spot-up shooters. Because he could create off the dribble at Iowa State. But if the shot release is slow, that's an element that will be taken away from him, at least initially in his career, which could put a drastic ceiling on his potential. So I was always a little bit hesitant with Halliburton because of that, even though I love his overall floor game. But like, there was talk about him going as high as 4 to Chicago, and I was like, that probably would be a reach. So I probably would have had him in, this 16-17 slot area. Where Isaiah Stewart got drafted, essentially. I think that would have been a good spot for Halliburton. But to turn it over to the Kings that you were about to ask about, it's fine. Look, they're probably going to trade Buddy Hield. It seems like they have lost Bogdan Bogdanovic moving forward. I mean, not to the Bucks, but it does seem like he's not going to be returning. So they need players who can handle the basketball. They need players who can pass. They need guys who can shoot. Maybe not off the dribble, but at least spotting up. So he fills a need. I probably, even though it doesn't really make sense, I probably would have gone with Kyle Lewis, because could you imagine that backcourt? Lewis and De'Aaron Fox? Like, how many fast break layups would they get per game?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be ridiculous.
It really would. And here's the thing. Like, Fox is a plus defender. Kyrie Lewis has every tool in the book to be a plus defender, so I wouldn't even worry about them necessarily defensively. Yeah, sure, they would give up size, but, And, like, if they turn on the Jets offensively and just keep putting pressure on defenses, I would take that. That would outweigh it. So, but I regress. Halliburton at 12, I think it's fine. Probably could have gone. They could have gotten something better, but it's not a bad pick, so to speak. It's okay for what they needed.
Yeah. And speaking of Kyra Lewis, I mean, him going to 13 for New Orleans, talking about a potential dynamo in transition. Okay, pair him with Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Zion Williamson.
And Jackson Hayes. And Jackson Hayes. Yeah. Like, oh boy, this was huge. So you and I, we obviously know quite a few Pelicans fans. chief among them, a friend of the podcast, Mason Ginsberg, who, mm-hmm. by the way, and this is an internal joke, who doesn't suck anymore. So that's great. Congratulations on that, Mason, if you're listening. Big day for you. But so they were hyped. They were psyched up. Yeah. Totally get it. I mean, they were celebrating in the streets safely. Because this is just a home run pick. This is a complete home run pick. They traded Drew Holiday to Milwaukee, and so they were in the market for a new point guard, and they got one who is just a blur. He comes at a fraction of the price. He fits with Zion, H-wise, and Brandon Ingram for that matter. So the thing about Kyra Lewis that intrigues me is he spent 2 years in college, but he's a year younger than most sophomores, so he's actually the same age of a freshman. He is way more polished than people realize. Like, he's coming into the NBA with a lot of college ball experience, which I know isn't everything, but you could sense great improvements from year one to year two. I think he's going to be a really, really strong NBA player when it's all said and done. He was the guy I would roll with. I didn't make a big board for the first time in 12 years because this draft is so wonky. So I mm-hmm. basically just pivoted and said, I'm not going to make a big board. All I know is I'm running with Kyra Lewis. I don't care if he goes one. I don't care if he goes 60. This is the guy I'm running with. So for the Pelicans to get Kyra Lewis at 13, huge, huge. Arguably the steal of the draft.
Yeah, I mean, it was drafting both for need and BPA, and you love when both of those things align.
Right, and it totally did. This was just great. I am very, very happy for Pelicans fans. This team right now it's so exciting. It is so exciting. In 3 years, this will be everyone's nightmare.
Yeah. We need to get to losers, but first, let's just rapid fire through the rest of the draft. Who were some of your other favorite winners, non-lottery team edition?
Well, Memphis is one. Yeah. I mean, look, they got Desmond Bane, what is it, that 30th? Like the final pick of the 30, first round?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, they traded two future seconds. We haven't seen the details of what they are yet.
I don't care what those details are. Desmond Bane, I would have taken before Tyrese Halliburton.
Wow.
He is strong as a bull. He's a great, no, scratch that, he's an elite three-point shooter. He mm-hmm. developed as a playmaker. And one thing we never really seem to talk about a whole lot is his rebounding. So he's 6'5", 6'6", in that area, but he doesn't have long arms. He has the JJ Redick problem. Like, his wingspan is actually, you know, less than his height, which is unusual. Right. But it allows for him to have a very, very compact jump shot. Because when you have long arms, they're often flailing around. Like, Kevin Durant is the exception, not the rule. Many guys with long arms really struggle finding a solid shooting touch. But when you have short arms, your shot is more compact. It's the same movement time and time again. But when you have short arms and you're a great rebounder at the wing position, that means you've got something extra. Because usually you use those extra inches on your arms to go grab rebounds outside of your area. He does that without having the additional wingspan. And rebounding is one of the things that usually translates from college basketball to the pros. So mm-hmm. he's just scrappy. And you can also just see it when you watch him play. He's scrappy. Like, he will give you everything. Like, he'll put a body on you when he's going for a board. He doesn't care. He is all about, you know, the end result, but he makes smart decisions in leading up to it. Love it for Memphis. Just perfect for that culture, perfect for that roster. Love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to come up with a better potential long-term compliment to Ja Morant than Desmond Bane. He was one of the guys I was, you know, hoping fell to 21 for the Sixers. And then when Maxey was on the board, I think they had to go with him. But I would be surprised if Desmond Bane was not high on their board as well. And then they got Killian Tilly as a undrafted free agent on a two-way, which is... You know, it's, again, what you were talking about earlier with a move on the margins. It's not going to draw a ton of national headlines, but, you know, that guy should not have been undrafted. He's the type of guy where it's, you have to think that, you know, once number 45 came on the clock, his agent was telling teams, don't draft me. He wants to pick his own team.
Right. Right. It's interesting. You know, this is a strategy that we're beginning to see. I wouldn't even be surprised if Devon Dotson did the same. I thought for a minute that Grant Riller had done it.
Yeah, me too. And Paul Reed.
And Paul Reed, yeah. And then they got drafted, but even so, yeah.
Yeah. We talked about the Sadiq Bey pick for Detroit earlier, but what did you think of the rest of that trade? It was a three-team deal in which the Clippers are getting Luke Kennard, the Nets are getting Landry Shamet, and then the Nets sent 19 to the Pistons. Oh, and the Clippers sent Rodney Magruder as well.
Yeah. So I'm a big Luke Kennard fan. I think he finally put it all together here this season. You know, he was, when he came in, he was a good shooter, and he was a good pick and roll guy, but he couldn't really get those two things combined in the NBA level like he did it so wonderfully at Duke. But at the NBA level, he struggled his first season. His second season was a bit better, but he was lacking a little bit in both departments. And then this season, he just brought it all together. He didn't play as much as I wanted him to play. I believe he had a... What was the injury that he had? I don't remember his injury.
I think it was a foot injury, if I remember
something
correctly.
Something of that sort, I think, yes. I seem to recall it was lower body, like you said, but I could be wrong. I don't remember his injury, but he was limited to only 28 games, so some people might say, is that enough of a sample size? I think it was, because the way that he just conducted himself, the way that he just made those leaps all over the floor, it was just apparent. Like, the dude went from 1.8 assists to 4.1. And that's not like assist means jack, but it was the way that he did it on the floor that just made me realize, oh yeah, he's seeing the court now. Like he's reaching that point. Remember, we always talk about there's some point in every, you know, rotation player's NBA career when the game begins to slow down. Mm-hmm. That happened for him this year. And for him to build on that on a team with Kawhi Leonard, I think that could be pretty huge.
Yeah, I mean, look, guy's an elite shooter, 40.2% for his career, shot 39.9 on 6.5 attempts per game last season. I think it's hard to argue he's not an upgrade in terms of talent on Landry Shamet. The reason they were willing to give up Shamet for him is, or I guess the reason that, you know, the Nets were willing to do this deal is Shamet has two more years left on his rookie contract. Kennard is up for an extension this offseason, or he'll be a restricted free agent next offseason. But, you know, that actually might help the Clippers, too. Because, God forbid, if things go bottom-up, Kawhi leaves or Paul George leaves, at least, like, Luke Kennard's a guy that they can build around moving forward.
Yeah. No, he major building block. Definitely more versatile in terms of being a creator than Landry Shamet.
Yeah.
And I would even argue a better shooter at this point. Coincidentally, both of them have shot 40.2% for their careers. So there you go. But
there you go.
It's interesting, though. I do think Kennard is the better overall player. And I think this was a strong pickup for the Clippers. And even I think it was a win-win-win. Because then you put Landry Shamet on Brooklyn. Well, I mean, what do they need? When they have so many on-ball players, what do you need? You need shooters. You need guys who won't take up dribbling possessions.
Yep.
Hi, Landry Shamet.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's used to play. I mean, he played with Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid as a rookie, Kawhi Leonard, and Paul George this past season. Now he's playing with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Like, he's used to not being a ball-dominant guy. He's used to just flying off screens and attempting basically only three-pointers.
Right.
So, you know, he's very good in that role. And yeah, to get him for two more years, it aligns with, you know, the contracts of KD and Kyrie, so that's great. And, you know, it gives them some insurance in case Joe Harris gets an offer that they refuse to match in free agency.
Right.
So, yeah, I like the move. As you said, it's a win-win-win. I mean, there were a lot of trades last night, I thought, that were just like, I like it for all parties. Like, you can see the logic behind why every team did these moves.
Well, they had 9 months to hash it out.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, it didn't help Milwaukee with Bogdanovich.
Oh, God. No. I don't even know what to say about that situation. So, what were they thinking, that he would just agree to it automatically?
Honestly, I don't even think it's worth discussing until we see the end point, because it very well could just be cover for the inevitable tampering charges they're going to get hit with. You know, Windhorst was on SportsCenter, I think, afterward, and was saying, you know, a lot of teams are just absolutely furious about this deal because it should not have been, you know, that it shouldn't have been allowed until Friday at 6 p.m. So for it to come out Monday, you know, was a very clear violation of the NBA's rules. So there's some speculation that it is just, you know, trying to cover their asses, basically, because, like, the NBA could invalidate the deal.
Yeah. If, well, the cat's out of the bag. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think he... Let me put it this way. If Bogdan Bogdanovich does end up a buck, then I think there should be a penalty, because then clearly it was planned. If he doesn't, then you can make the argument, hey, you know what, you didn't get the player that you, you know, that you tampered to get. Fine, that's your penalty.
Right, I agree. That's one of the more fun storylines heading into tomorrow. It's like, what is the resolution to this saga?
Yeah.
But the other team that I want to call out as a first-round winner was the Toronto Raptors. I know there are a lot of Raptors fans on Twitter who were very sad as the 20s were unfolding, because a lot of their favorite targets were coming off the board. But getting Malachi Flynn at 29, I think they just walked into another, you know, again, a guy... He shot 37.3 from three on 6.4 attempts per game at San Diego State.
Yeah.
Just, you know, this is another one of those late first round picks for them that you can just see in a couple of years is going to be a very valuable piece. It could be potential Fred VanVleet insurance. Not that he's going to step into FVV's role right away, but, you know, a similar type prospect to him.
Right. And also not an unsimilar prospect as Kyle Lowry, actually, because Malachi Flynn can defend. He's a high-level defender. He moves well, and he has these high-arcing shots. So he's almost a 3-and-D point guard, but with a handle. Does that remind you of anyone that they currently have, or two that they currently have in the backcourt? So
yeah,
the Raptors definitely have, you know, a preference to an archetype type of player here. And
sure.
Malachi Flynn at 29 is great insurance, not just for if Fred VanVleet should bolt, which I hope not, but also for the day comes that, you know, Lowry gets old. I mean, we keep kind of expecting it, and then he doesn't. But Father Time is undefeated, so at some point he will have to. And at that point, you know, Malachi Flynn might have had 2 years in the league. He might be ready to take over, or at least for get a bigger role. I love the pick. I think this is like a typical Masai Ujiri pick. It's one that people really won't put any stock into, but it's low-key really, really strong.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Are there any other winners you want to shout out, or should we finally get to some of the losers?
Well, okay, so really, really quickly, Onyeka Okongwu at 6, I absolutely love it for Atlanta in terms of talent. I have no idea where he gets minutes, because they already have Bruno Fernando, Clint Capella, John Collins, and even if you want to go down, like, just the front court, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, like, there's just Dwayne Dedmon still there. They have so many, you know, players locked up in that front court that I hope that they end up moving some, because Onyeka Okongwu is deserving of minutes, at the very least developmental minutes, right now. He is that good. He is the type of center that I would love to pair with Trae Young and you know, John Collins, theoretically at least, long-term. At the very least, Trae Young.
Yeah.
Love it for them. it's just a matter of where will he get minutes, who will be out of the rotation, who will get traded. That's a follow-up thing, but from a raw talent perspective, well done, Atlanta. You got a hell of a player at six.
Yeah, I agree with that. I liked Cole Anthony at 15 to the Magic as well.
Oh, yeah. The Magic finally got a point guard, Brian.
I know. Well, I mean, they have Markel, but, you know, I think both of those guys, in theory, can play both on and off the ball, so I'll be interested to see which roles they ultimately settle into. But, you know, right. I think that could be their front or their backcourt of the future.
You're told, how could I forget Markel Fultz playing off the ball as a shooter? That's right. That makes total sense, Brian.
He could be a slasher and cutter, if nothing else.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's go losers then, Mort. Where do you want to start?
I actually don't think there are a whole lot of losers. So you sent me an email, by the way, where this is your opinion in terms of losers, and I would have brought this up in the winner section, but I just wanted to illustrate to people that I'm very upset with something that you did, so I was waiting. You have Phoenix taking Jalen Smith at 10 as a losing thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that.
Interesting. Why?
Because first and foremost, long term, I understand that he's not going to be a small forward. He's a big, and like the NBA power forward, as I've talked about in this episode as well, is not in the big sense. That said, there's always exceptions when you can guard. And when you can shoot. And when you have these components that are just so vital also for the three slot, he can shoot the ball. He can defend at a high level. He can rebound the ever-living hell out of that basketball. The only thing he's really lacking to be a full-time starting four, like a traditional four-man in terms of body and fit, is playmaking. And yes, that is a huge, huge lack of ability in the NBA 2020. That said, look at this draft. Overall, you don't get that type of talent elsewhere because this draft was not that high on talent. It was good on depth, but he's really good. He is a guy who initially could come in and just back up Aiden and Sarge and or Cam Johnson, whoever starts at the four. Like, he is good. There's defense, there's rebounding, there's shot making. He's really explosive off the floor. And now with Chris Paul there, you know, pick and roll chances are going to be there almost constantly. Devin Booker is a good pick and roll player. I like that pick. I understand it's not, you know, new age thinking, but for their particular setup, it needn't be.
That's fair. I mean, the reason I put them as a loser is because it seemed like a reach just based on the general consensus from draft people who I trust much more than myself. Because I, you know, people like Sam Vecenie spend months of their lives doing this type of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had a second round grade on Jalen Smith. So to take him at number 10 when guys like Vassell, Kira Lewis, I know you're down on Tyrese Halliburton, but, you know, Aaron Nesmith, like guys like that are still on the board, I just thought was a reach. Like, if you're going to take Jalen Smith, that's cool. But, like, were there any teams in the mid-first round that you were really worried about taking him?
Yeah.
Like,
Detroit took Isaiah Stewart at 16.
That's fair.
And he is a worse player than Jalen Smith, I would argue. A significantly worse player, at least right now. So I understand the thinking, though. I do. He is not ball strong, Jalen Smith, that is. And that is a concern in today's NBA. That said, when you watch him play, when you look at his statistical profile, it seems like the floor is actually a little bit higher than most people give him credit for. Again, player comps are always horrible because you don't really get the same sense of, like, what the player entails, but sometimes it can be useful just to, like, gauge the type of player we're discussing. And Jalen Smith has Ibaka vibes. Like, a guy who can spot up from three, a guy who will still be active around the basket, a guy who will block shots, a guy who will rebound. Like, that is fine. Like, that is absolutely fine at that draft slot, especially in this draft.
That's fair. I mean, I'm really just judging it based on perceived reach, but hey, look, it worked out well with them. Cameron Johnson was the same thing last year,
right?
I mean, they got him at number 11. Everyone thought, oh, we got, you know, this guy should have gone in the 20s or 30s, and it worked out well. So, you know, maybe they're on to something. they made Draft Twitter's least favorite pick, really, for each of the last 3 years, taking Ayton over Doncic in 2018, too. But, you know, they have a vision, and it seems to be panning out, so it's hard to bash them too much.
Right. I do agree it's a reach. Like, Kyrie Lewis obviously would have been better, but my point is he's not a bad player. And if he's a reach by, like, 3 or 4 picks in this draft, I can forgive it, because it's this draft.
That's fair.
And it's also why I still have Detroit as a winner, despite taking Isaiah Stewart probably 10 spots too high.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're the rest of what they did.
Exactly.
I think you can even ignore. But
yeah.
What do you think? It seems like there's a lot of consternation from Knicks fans about Obi Toppin at 8. What do you think of that pick?
Oh, I mean, it's a fantastic story. He was really emotional, like, because I'm from New York. It was a great story.
Yeah.
By the way, just a side note before I actually answer your question. Can we agree to stop, you know, this was actually Nasir Little who brought this up, but I totally agree with him. Can we stop just bringing up players' worst, most tragic moments in life on national television? This is supposed to be their best day ever. And you're like, oh, so your dad and your whole family got murdered, and like, what?
Right, right.
Like, what? Why would you want to relive that on draft day? What the hell, NBA or ESPN? This was awful.
Well, this was a theme during the NFL draft, too. People were equally like, can we stop talking about, like, your entire family getting cancer?
Yeah. This is just, that was, oh my. I mean, if the players were down for it, sure, but, like, as you could see with this year Little, like, why? Like, no, that's not cool. Toppin was very emotional, like, because I grew up in New York, this means a lot to me. Like, if I'm from New York, so that's cute. That's a good story. I love this story. And now, just, that's why I hate where I'm going with this.
Uh-oh.
I like Obi Toppin, I do. I think he's actually going to win Rookie of the Year. But, he long term, what's the upside here? He's a pick-and-roll big man who can shoot a little bit, sure. He's not a defender. He's not going to be a playmaker because he's just not fluid enough to be that.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, there's a lot to like, but the Knicks have not really... The Knicks seem to be that team that looks at points per game and go, oh, that's the best player. Let's grab him. Now, it could work out. I hope for their sake, especially the fan base, that it will work out. But, man, it's R.J. Barrett who, so far at least, has not proven himself to have a very high IQ when it comes to his own shot creation. I actually do like his IQ when it comes to passing. There is something there. But with Obi Toppin, even though he was highly efficient around the basket in college, I do get the sense that the NBA could prove a little overwhelming for him to be that successful. Like, when I say Rookie of the Year, I'm talking about not necessarily Michael Carter-Williams territory, but someone who will be very good early on, and then teams will figure him out, and it'll be, oh, okay. I hope I'm wrong, because from a personality perspective and everything I hear about him, he's a stand-up guy. Like, he's a legitimately good guy who works his ass off. So I desperately hope that I'm wrong on this. I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for the Knicks to be right on this. But you know, the eye test, when you go into it, it doesn't look necessarily pretty. I do like Emmanuel Quickly at 25, though. I love that because he's just a hardcore shooter. They really need that. So I'm not, you know, entirely low on the Knicks. That one has some risk to it.
Yeah, and I mean, the value that they flipped, it was 20... What did they have originally? They had 27 and 38. They traded up to 23. And then they traded 23 to the Timberwolves to go back down to 25 and 33. So they ended up moving up 2 spots in the first round and 5 spots in the second round from their original pick by doing nothing else.
Yeah.
So that was actually pretty creative of Leon Rose. But yes, I think the concerns about Toppin's fit there is fair. And look, I mean, the Knicks just haven't had a great track record of developing any prospects in recent years, and any especially mid to late lottery guys. I mean, Mitchell Robinson's the one exception, but look no further than Frankie Smokes and Kevin Knox as the cautionary tale for what could happen here. So right. hopefully we're wrong and he pans out and everything's great, but I think it's a fair concern there. I don't even want to call the Warriors a draft night loser because, like, they were so heavily rumored with Wiseman at two, and, you know, you can the fit makes sense on paper, but we're still waiting for details here. But, I mean, it does not sound good. Klay Thompson suffered some sort of lower leg injury yesterday. There are reports that it may be an Achilles.
I think that was confirmed by Chris Haynes, no?
Yeah, they say they're concerned about it. Right? Oh, okay. I don't think they have confirmation that he has definitely torn it. But either way, I mean, if you lose Klay again before the season hopefully it's not the full season. I know Woj said there's some optimism that it might not be the full season, but
right.
I think that's we just got to keep our fingers crossed for Klay because that would really suck.
Yeah. Well, one of our listeners, Jonas, who's listening in, because we can see that here on Locker Room, he suffered that injury a couple years back, and I was following along on Facebook. That's a long journey. That is a long journey. And for Klay to also just have gone through the ACL tear, man, it is rough, man. It is rough.
Yeah.
By the way, Carter Elliott is asking us, like, thoughts on the Pistons draft. Carter, we actually went through the Pistons some time ago, but this podcast will be out, like, on Spreaker and iTunes or Apple Podcasts is called now, Spotify and whatnot. So when it's out, you can go find it. Lots of Pistons talk. We are very, very optimistic about what the Pistons did.
Yes. I feel like we are pouring dirt over Houston, but...
Oh, do it. Like, pour as much dirt as you want. I'm totally okay. Look, I love Houston fans, but I do not love the current Houston organization. So let's pour as much dirt as we can.
Well, I mean, just sending Ariza and 16 for a heavily protected first to Detroit, plus paying... I mean, I think the way Woj reported it was confusing. It's all essentially part of the same deal. They paid $4.6 million for a second-round pick next year that's probably going to be in the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's just Tillman Fertitta's trying to save more money. It's gross. For James Harden's sake, I hope it is the precursor to James Harden getting out of Houston, because otherwise, trading Robert Covington for a reason, these picks, and then trading Ariza, like, you're just depleting this team of talent. The Houston Rockets have gotten significantly worse this offseason, and they didn't need to.
Right. They would have gotten worse just by, having Eric Gordon age and get even worse, because that trajectory has gone down. So they even have the eternal regression going. Now they're adding the external regression to it, which is just adding insult to injury. Oh boy, no, the 4.6 or 4.7 million for the second rounder next year, that was wild to me. Like, what was that all about?
I really think it's part of the trade to, like, cover part of Ariza's buyout,
right?
Would be my guess.
It might be. Oh god, they are in a free fall right now, and it doesn't look good. I suspect that moving forward, like I said on the last show, this is going to be an organization that has this sign on the door where it just says free agents go away.
Right. Well, I mean, I wonder if Brooklyn getting Shamet for 19 was part of the eventual Harden deal.
I mean, it could be. Absolutely. the thing though is that you can't then trade Shamet in a package, right?
I think you can, because he wasn't aggregated.
Oh, right, because you got him for just one. That's true. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a weird rule, by the way. At some point, we need to revisit that rule. Like, why does that exist?
Yeah, and then I think I saw that the deadline is shortened, so the aggregation, you could trade a player who was acquired, aggregate a player who was acquired in another aggregated deal. You can trade them as of December 9th. So that...
Okay.
That window is shorter. Usually it's 2 months.
So Anthony DePaul has actually figured out why the $4.6 million was included. He says this is money laundering for his Bubba Gump franchises.
That might be right, yeah. That
allegedly. Might be true. Allegedly.
Right.
This is
right.
A podcast that's coming out in America.
No libel here.
Allegedly. No.
What did you think? We haven't hit the number one pick. What did you think of Minnesota taking Anthony Edwards there?
Well, they did it.
They clearly didn't read the story that was circulating around Twitter on Tuesday.
So here's the thing. I've actually been pretty positive about Anthony Edwards. I've repeatedly said everywhere I've spoken, like a podcast or even if I've written, I've said this is the guy who has the highest upside if he becomes serious about his game. He is a bulldozer, NFL linebacker. And that's how I've described him, like an NFL linebacker. The problem is, Brian, he might actually prefer to be an NFL linebacker than be the first pick in the NBA draft. And that has some concern to me. And there are a couple guys on Twitter going, oh, the Andrew Wiggins comparisons are lazy. Yeah, I don't agree with that whatsoever. Like, get off your high horse. Because it is a question of mentality. It's a question of, are you dedicated enough to understand the role that you're in? I'm not talking about their games. They are different players, different playing styles, all of that. And yes, they are also different people. You can't mimic the same mentality necessarily, but these were the same concerns. These were the exact same concerns as Andrew Wiggins, and ignoring that because you feel it's lazy, which is just some elitist BS. Like, this is a contract that is going to go upwards of $44 million because it's the first overall draft pick, not to mention the millions of dollars you're going to pour into his development. If you are not cautious as an NBA organization, and if you don't look at every single angle, you're not doing your job. So, yeah, it's fine for NBA Twitter to go, oh, that's lazy. No, you have to take it into consideration. You have to. As an organization who went through, what, 6 years, 5.5 years, however much it was with Andrew Wiggins, you absolutely have to make adjustments. I'll bring up the Detroit Pistons as an example. When they drafted Darko Milicic back in 2003 as the second overall pick, they did not do their homework enough. They just did not do their homework, and they've said as much. Then when they had the 10th pick in, I want to say 2012, that's when Andre Drummond was drafted, right? 12? I think it was 12. The Pistons organization actually went out afterwards and said, we learned from the Darko Milicic failure that we did not put in the research. We did not put in enough hours to do the research. So with Andre Drummond, they called up everyone, like all the way back to his like third grade teacher. They went so deep on background and motivation level and whatnot. And the reason I bring up Drummond is, do you remember what the big issue with him was at Connecticut?
Motor,
motivation, all these things. It was the constant subject being brought up, and the Pistons did not want to find themselves in that situation again. So here's where I'm at. If the Wolves did the same thing as the Pistons and they put way more research hours into Anthony Edwards than they did Andrew Wiggins, and then they feel absolutely certain that history is not going to repeat itself, then this is a good pick and I support it fully. If they did not, and history is bound to repeat itself, then all the lazy comparisons can go F themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the people saying with those criticisms of, you know, don't compare Edwards to Wiggins, are saying it, their games are different. But, you know, we had Wass on the podcast before the draft, and, you know, we got into some of those concerns, and he brought up the Wiggins comp too. Yeah. And, you know, I think the people who are talking to NBA scouts in particular probably have a different viewpoint than the people who are on draft Twitter just analyzing film and, you know, who don't have contacts within the league, because like these are the types of guys who, as you say, are doing that type of background evaluation. And again, it's not these guys are this, they don't have the same game. It's this is the big concern with both of these guys, and it is the, does he actually really like, is basketball his passion, or is he playing basketball because he's talented, but he doesn't actually care, and he's not going to put in the work to get better? I mean, you know, the infamous Glenn Taylor, Andrew Wiggins meeting before they gave him the max contract, they had to like sit Andrew Wiggins down and say, you promise you're going to get better.
Right. But
which is not a good sign when you're going to give someone $150 million.
Yeah. And look, I get it. Like, I think it's completely fair that, you know, Anthony Edwards does not have the Kobe insanity around him. That's fair. Like, mm-hmm. you know, that shouldn't be the threshold that we hold players to. That was a thing that was brought up a lot yesterday, and I completely agree with that. You shouldn't necessarily be as maniacal as a Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant or LeBron James. Totally mm-hmm. fine. But you should at least show more interest when you are about to be the number one freaking draft pick of an entire sport. That's where I'm at. I want to see more dedication in that sense. And for him to be so indifferent about it, that's my problem. He looks indifferent to it. And that is on the surface analysis from me, fully realizing and hoping that it's wrong. But we can only react to what we see, Brian. And what we see is a guy who is like, oh, this is dope. Hey, let me try to tell Dame that he's no longer the best rapper in the league. Like, what? Right. That's your focus?
Right. I will say this as a positive for Minnesota and possibly a negative for OKC. I thought trading 17 for Ricky Rubio and 25 and 28 was a pretty great value.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And getting Ricky Rubio back, you know what? That is the thing that I think could turn Anthony Edwards around. Because while Ricky Rubio doesn't have the reputation as a hard-nosed guy, he will let you know if you are, you know, just not taking things serious. If he's on the court with you, like, we all know that Ricky Rubio, like, smile, Alexi, and all that thing. Yeah, that's cute.
Right.
He will let you know if you're not taking it serious. Like, he won't, you know, chew you out, but he'll let you know what you're doing right now is not helping. It is just not helping. And he'll talk to coach, and he'll go, he's not ready. He's not in the game right now. Sit him down. We'll figure something out later. Like, he's in there. He's in the game. He is a hardcore professional. So the addition of Ricky Rubio to the Minnesota Timberwolves could actually be one of the greatest things that we see from Anthony Edwards' career moving forward.
So what do you think of that trade from OKC's side or OKC's night as a whole? I mean, did they get enough to take on Horford? What do you think of Poku at 17 with the pick they traded all of that to get?
No, it's fine. I mean, nothing really stood out. Poku is interesting, right? He's essentially just a huge gamble. 200 pounds, razor thin. What was he called? Like Pokic? Because the Jokic similarities.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
But he is like the Bruno Caboclo, like 2 years away of being 2 years away. Really, really raw. Lot of talent, lot of potential in that sense, but man, so skinny, has so much work to do. It's a long-term gamble, and if it works, then this draft grade, like, and I'm not giving them grades right now because they haven't played a minute, we could take, you have OKC in the losers department, I have them in the who the hell knows department. So they could go, they're in purgatory right now, they could go either way.
That's fair.
I do like Theo Maledon at 34, though.
Yeah, I did too. And then, you know, I follow our friend of the podcast, Keith Smith, on Twitter. It seems like Boston fans were not wild about their draft. I thought Nesmith at 14 is pretty good value. I know there was some concern there, I think about a foot injury or a toe injury or something like that, if memory serves. But, you know, Peyton Pritchard did not seem to generate a ton of love at 26, and then selling the, or trading the pick that became Desmond Bane to Memphis for two future seconds did not seem to go over well on Celtics Twitter.
It did not, especially because Desmond Bane in Boston would have been perfect. Perfect. It's one of those, you know, it's probably one of those prearranged deals where you kind of figure, oh, that guy's not going to be there at that spot, so let me just get out of this pick. Oh, boy. That's not great. That is not great.
Truly hate to see it.
Yeah, you. Oh, yeah. Well, you love it because you have a blood feud going with the Celtics. But no, it's that was tough. I do like Nesmith at 14, but yeah, I mean it's the shooting, and that's pretty much it, right? He'll come in and he'll space the floor. Then again, you could argue, do they really need more at this point? Like, if you have a guy who might be the best shooter in the draft. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, like they're gonna have so many driving lanes. Kemba Walker too. That's just gonna open things up. So at this point, do they need more? So Dustin Mason, in our comments, are basically saying that Nesmith is trash. As an overall player, I get where he's coming from, but you have to look at the one elite skill that he does have, and right. In that particular role, he's a star. Like, that's at least the goal. You know how coaches always say, be a star in your role? And for him, yeah. that's the next level. That is, you know, be a star as a shooter and help us space the court. I understand the pick. I think it's fine. But he doesn't have to.
It harkens back to what we were saying about Seth Curry earlier. Like, Josh Richardson, in a vacuum, better player. Seth Curry with the one elite skill. So Boston, where you have Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker, you know, you've got high volume, high usage guys, add a shooter like Nesmith. Right. Like, you don't need him to take 20 shots a game. You need him to just shoot, catch and shoot. That is your entire role.
10 threes per game when he's in his prime. It's fine.
Right.
And see, that would have sounded insane had we set that when Pod started in 2016. That's where we are with most... like strong shooters nowadays, we're basically seeing 10 threes a game. Go for it.
Yeah. Well, that is enough draft talk for one day, Mort. We will be back tomorrow, live at 6 p.m. when free agency opens. We will be back on the Locker Room app to discuss. I mean, Daryl Morey was asked, like, what do you expect tomorrow night? And he's like, I expect absolute pandemonium. So I'm pretty excited. We should all try to get some sleep tonight because it's going to be a wild day tomorrow. But yeah, download the Locker Room app. You can come hang out live with us as free agency starts. But in the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. Are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort. Feel better. Rest up.
Yeah, thank you, man. You too. Don't die.